Tonight I'd like to go through with you Mishnah Yizayin, Perek Gimel Avos. Rekiva Omer, Kiva would say, Sechoik v'kalas roish magilim esa adam le'erva. Sechoik, we usually translate as laughter or frivolous behavior, will bring a person to sin in regard to immoral behavior, narayis. Mesayres siyog le'tayra. When a person follows Messiah, so that is the fence that keeps Torah intact. Ma'asois siyog le'osher, giving miser is a fence for wealth. Nedarim is a siyog le'prishos, making vows, self-imposed restrictions on things that are otherwise permitted is defense for precious abstention and siyog l'chach m'shtika. And defense for wisdom is silence. So Rabbi Akiva is describing, at least in the second half of the Mishnah, a number of things that are necessary to achieve and maintain certain madrigas for a person who wants to achieve and hold on to Torah, so you have to follow our Messiah in what the Torah is saying. When it comes to wealth, a person wants to maintain his wealth, wants to guard his wealth, he has to give Meiser. If a person wants to be parush, if a person wants to be extra careful and stay away from things that are otherwise permitted, because if a person wants to stay away from things that are usur, the Sfarim teach us, stay away from things that would be allowed, and certainly you won't do things that are not allowed. And siyog l'chachma, if a person endeavors to to be wise, so he has to learn the value of silence, listening to what someone else has to say. Sometimes not saying things that shouldn't be said. But the first part, interestingly enough, doesn't mention a siyog. He begins by saying, s'chog v'kalus roish, ma'gilam s'adam l'erva. The Rabbein Yon explains in the Mishnah, Sechoik and Devesicha Betela with Kalus Roish Magil in the Erva. When a person laughs, jokes around, idle chatter, frivolous behavior brings to Erva, Aval Koivid Roish Vahayira Him Siogla Arayas. A sense of Koivid Roish, seriousness, a sense of awe or fear, as opposed to lightheartedness, is the fence for arayas. Shekolzos haMishnah b'siyogim ederes, because the Mishnah is discussing siyogim. So it doesn't say, it maybe should have said, kovid roish and yira is a siyog l'kedusha. That's how you maintain holiness. But you wouldn't have gotten the point that he's trying to make. So Rabbi Yehuda says you could understand in terms of siyog, but that's not how he said it. Kiregu said it that if a person wants to stay away from erva, he has to stay away from schuch and kalas roish, intergender. So I want to talk about that a little bit and explain what the concerns are and a lot of the nisyonis that we face today. If I wouldn't look for a little translation for Sechok and Kalas Rosh, again, you're looking for a little translation of Sechok and Kalas Rosh. So Sechok is to laugh, to be humorous, and Kalas Rosh, typically, you know, literally Kalas light, so lighthearted. I often use the term frivolous behavior in the context of describing what Kalas Rosh is about. But again, if I wasn't going to be anchored to a literal translation, I would have just said, Schog v'kasosh v'yesam le'erva, flirting leads to agilei arayis. Now, maybe if you look in a dictionary, I haven't. Maybe the word flirt has in it schog v'kasosh. Maybe that's part of the concept. Maybe you'll tell me, no, flirting is getting attention. It's being noticed. So then it's not exactly schog v'kasosh. It's maybe something else. But certainly it belongs in that list. As if you're looking for things that are marglas or adam le'erva, so if Sochin Kasrosh doesn't include flirting, obviously you would add it to the list of things. So Akiva is telling us that there are behaviors between men and women that are unacceptable, and not because they in and of themselves is forbidden. It is something which leads to something else. Now, in that context, many of you know that the Chumash, the Torah tells us, you shouldn't do anything which leads to getting eyes. So even though when it comes to, let's say, the issur of eating meat and milk, the Torah doesn't say, don't eat chicken with milk because you may end up eating meat with milk. Rather, the Chacham came along and said, if you can't eat meat and milk, don't eat chicken with milk. So that's a rabbinic, you know, injunction or siyag, if you will. When it came to Gili Arayis, the Torah itself says, don't do things that lead to Gili Arayis. So even if it's not Gili Arayis itself, don't do things that lead to Gili Arayis. So some of this behavior may be prohibited by the Torah itself. And it wouldn't surprise me if I came across a sefer somewhere that says that flirting is asur min haTorah. Again, I haven't seen it, but it wouldn't be, I wouldn't think it's so unreasonable. And I think that's, you know, obvious. And the real issue, I think, is not even so much what's flirting as much as what do we call Sochin Kasrosh, and particularly when you deal with men or men deal with women at work, perhaps in school, and what is the definition of Sochin Kasrosh, or flirting for that matter, that is usur, as opposed to being polite, not appearing to be rude. So where do we draw the line between those two? There's a book that I gave, like, this book like years ago in a shiur for married people called 9 to 5. I don't know if you've ever seen this, and I don't even know if it's available anymore. 9 to 5, A Guide to Modest Conduct for Today's Workplace. And it's a fascinating book. It's actually, I have it both in English and in Hebrew that came out. And it was put up by Irgun Shiuri Torah. So again, I don't know if they still have copies of this particular volume or not. I'll give you a phone number if you want to call the author. It's a Rabbi Nyman, 845. I don't even know if that's still the area code in Muncie. I think it is. 845-425-7597. So he wrote this book about how to behave in the workplace. So half the sefer, half the book is Hichas Yichud. But the first half is just, what are you allowed to say? What are you not allowed to say? What are you allowed to do? What are you not allowed to do? And much of his point is that there's no prohibition against behaving professionally in the workplace. That means you dress professionally, you talk professionally, you behave professionally, you do things that are expected of a professional in a business. And you could take it for granted that there'll be men and women working perhaps in the same office or in the same place or with clients that are male, female. But there's a way to do that professionally, which is not personal. And that's basically the line he's drawn between professional conduct and professional interactions, a professional exchange versus a personal exchange and a personal interaction. So he gives some examples, scenarios in the beginning of the first chapter of what do you do in these situations. Mr. Klein, Mr. Goldberg, and Mrs. Kaplan are in the elevator together. After some silence, Mr. Klein says to Mr. Goldberg, "How was your Shabbos?" And Mr. Goldberg responds. But Mr. Klein realizes he's ignoring Mrs. Kaplan. So may he turn to her and politely inquire, "How was your Shabbos?" Another example, Mrs. Green has just accepted a position as a medical assistant in a cardiologist's office. "By the way, where exactly do you live?" inquires the doctor. "Oh, on Main Street," she says. "Public transportation from the suburbs can be rather tedious," says Dr. Marcus. I pace a quarter every morning on the way to work. I don't mind picking you up. It's a half-hour ride, then it gets boring, so I could pick you up on the way to the office. can this woman who's going to work in his office accept the rock? So he goes on to explain that any discussion in the workplace about work, a project, a client, anything work related, is not schoik and kavas roish. That's not frivolous, that's not flirtatious, that's business. But the minute you begin by saying, and where are you going on vacation this summer? How are you going to spend Shabbos Chanukah? How is your Shabbos? That's not professional. That's not work-related. That's not relevant to the relationship as employees together, employer, employee, whatever it is. And in this context, he says that type of question is off-limits. Now, I don't think the question in and of itself is chuk and kalas roish. For a man to ask a woman at work, where is she going on vacation or how is Shabbos? No, that's not frivolous, it's not lighthearted, and I don't think it's flirtatious. But it's none of his business. It's a personal question. That's the kind of question two friends would ask each other. So two women who work together would ask each other such a question. The man at work is not friends with the woman at work. That's the point he's trying to make. And if this is not your friend, this is an employee, an employer, you work for him, you work for her, you work together, whatever it is. So you have to separate the work-related stuff, which is fine, versus the personal things, which are not fine. So he would say in the book, you don't ask the lady on the elevator, how was your Shabbos? We learn in this week's parsha that Avram Avinu was hosting guests, and they say to Avram, "Ayei Sarah Ishtacha, where is Sarah, your wife?" And he answers, "She's be'oil, she's in the tent." And Rashi says that it's commonplace when you are a guest in someone's house to inquire of the well-being of the spouse. How is your wife? That's fine. That's Rashi in the parasha. It's the Malachim said to Avram, "Ayei Sarah Ishtacha." Where's Sarah? Is everything okay? Whatever. Yeah, she's fine. It doesn't say, please give Sarah warm regards from me. Please tell her I said hello. It didn't say that. And that may be Yasser. That may be not allowed to send her personal regards. So, to inquire, how is she? That's fine. That's being polite. That's not, you know, we don't want to be rude, we want to be polite, that's derech eretz, that's fine. That's not crossing the line into getting personal or chummy or friendly, if you will, with the other person. So, personal things are off limits. In addition, he goes on to say very interestingly that if a worker or co-worker did a very good job on a project or something, you should compliment the work and not the person. That was great work. Instead of saying, you're great, look what you did, that's amazing. Don't put it on the person, put it on the job that they did. And again, I'm not saying if you put it the other way, that's so kalas rosh. But I will tell you in a minute what happens when you compliment the person instead of the work. There's another issue he brings up in the Sefer, that co-workers of different genders should not be exchanging presents or gifts. And at first, that sounds pretty obvious. It is a halacha, by the way, in Shulchan Aruch, in the halachas of Shalach Manas. Purim Tam, he said in Shalach Manas, Shulchan Aruch says, men give to men, women give to women, not vice versa. So that's already in the Shulchan Aruch. So he says, what happens if someone at work says, lunch is on me, and he's going to buy lunch for all the fellow workers. So he says, if it's the boss buying lunch and the boss does that, that's fine. That's like a perk for the job. But let's say a co-worker they're working very hard on the project, they're going to skip lunch and they're going to eat in the office and they make the orders, and one guy says, I'll take care of the bill. So he says it would be wrong for a woman to accept that she would have to pay for her meal, because otherwise accepting a gift. So I don't know myself if that's really the same. You know, it's one thing if it's just the two of them and he says, I'll buy lunch. That's a direct gift, so to speak, to her. If it's like the whole office, it's less personal. It's not like I'm personally giving you something. So I do hear a distinction, but he says, listen, the halacha says a man gives a man, a lady gives a lady. So that's it. So this case would be a man giving a lady. You can't accept the gift. So he takes it maybe a little extreme, and it's okay. You know, it doesn't bother me. I don't know it's also the other way. But certainly one-on-one, he says, what happens if you have to take someone to lunch, a business lunch, whatever? So that's part of business. Sometimes you take people out to eat. So if your brand has to take a woman out to lunch to discuss a deal or whatever, so that can be done, but it's got to, the conversation has to stay on business, which is not that simple. It's really not such a simple thing to do. And I don't know if that would be an ideal thing for a man to do with a woman. So you have to be careful. Now, what he doesn't mention, because this is the date. This has been around for a while. This was 2001. Okay, so if this was written today, I would say it is unacceptable for a woman to attach any emoticon to a message to a man other than her husband, maybe brother. And I heard this from a Menahel who was describing how it was a very difficult day in school, and the secretary had to send him an email, and it was just like one thing after the other, and at the end she put a smiley face that you know, things aren't so bad, whatever. And it's a very firm lady and a modest woman, and she didn't mean anything by it, and he saw this and he went into her office and says, Mrs. So-and-so, you need to know this is unacceptable. You cannot ever put an emoticon, a smiley face, whatever, when you're sending a message to a man. It's not appropriate. Not appropriate. So that's not in the book. It should be in the book. You could question whether or not it's appropriate to text. Let's say your boss or coworker you need to contact. If texting is an option, is that okay or not okay? In of itself, one could say, what's the difference of a phone call or text or an email? It could be that's true. It could be there's no difference. Certainly, once you start adding smiley faces, it's not the same. That's not okay. I know there are rabbanim who feel that men and women should not text each other, even business related. Even things like that, it's too friendly. On a professional level, you're not texting. You don't text on a professional level. Professionally, you'll make phone calls and you might email. You're not texting. Texting is a much more casual form of conversation. But again, I'm not saying that's for everybody. I'm just saying I could hear such a thing. In other words, in this book, he also goes through how he feels inappropriate in the workplace for men and women to address each other by first names. And he describes a woman's first day at work, and she says to Mr. Klein, where do I work? And he says, oh, we're very Hamish, you just call me Moish. She should say, I'm sorry, I understand it's Hamish around here, but I prefer to call you Mr. Klein, and I am Miss So-and-so, or Mrs. So-and-so, whatever. So I'm not saying you cannot maintain a professional relationship on a first name basis. It probably can be done, but it's an extra barrier. So I think like texting is the same kind of thing. I'm not saying texting in and of itself by definition means you've crossed the line between professionalism and personal or friendly, but it's borderline. I could hear it being borderline, and it may depend on how the business works and whatever. The person should be careful with that. Now, this is focusing on the workplace. Certainly, if you're in school and there are other students, that want to discuss things with you, you shouldn't be rude. But I suspect most fellows in college who are approaching you to talk to you are interested in a friendly relationship and not necessarily a professional student-to-student relationship. So it's really something you should avoid, I think, at basically all costs. Any question about that? No? Okay. So now, I mentioned to you before idea of praising work. I'm going to tell you a phenomena, and it really is not any big chiddush, but it's something that you should be aware of, kind of like this, know this exists, and if you're ever in this situation, you should be aware of what's happening. If a person gets complimented, if a woman gets complimented by a man, let's be very specific, a woman gets complimented by a man for the work she does, her creativity, her skill, her abilities, she will feel good about that and may feel an attraction to this person. I don't know any other way to say it. Closeness. When a woman is happily married and has a good relationship with her husband, these things may happen, and it doesn't mean anything. It just makes no impression. But sometimes there is something lacking in a marriage that's not being addressed. And if a woman is not complimented at home for her creativity, for her sense of humor, for her skills, and she is complimented at work by another man for her creativity and her sense of humor and her skills, that is going to lead to a very bad situation. And it has happened, and it does happen, and it will happen. I was talking to a woman who was married for many years, and she found herself very interested in this man at work because he gave her positive feedback, basically, which she did not get at home. And she realized this is not good. And she calls me up. What's she supposed to do? For the fellow's sake, by the way, he may not realize at all that this is happening. He just thinks he's a nice guy, and he compliments all the ladies at work about their work and tells them how great they are and wonderful they are. And he's totally not realizing that this is crossing the line of relationships or whatever. And he also doesn't know what goes on in these women's homes and their lives in general. So this lady calls me up, and I right away asked her, how are things at home with her husband? And she said, things aren't great. And I said, well, there's two issues here. Number one, you have to work on your marriage. And she was telling me, I was never interested in boys in high school. I was never that kind of girl. I never did anything like this. It was very sad. I mean, she's married for a number of years. They say, I'll go to seminary. And I'm not that kind of girl. I was never that kind of girl. What's going on? Like, what am I supposed to do? And I explained to her, if you're not getting something at home in your relationship at home, then you may find yourself getting it from somewhere else. And I told you she has to do things. She has to, A, work on her marriage. She has to discuss with her husband that she's not getting from him what she needs, whatever, go to a marriage counselor, whatever it is, to work on that. And the flip side of it is, I said, you got to find a way to deal with this work situation, and if it means leaving the job, then leave the job. Sometimes the only etzah is to find another job. And that's not an easy thing to do, especially if you're the main breadwinner in your home. If you're the main breadwinner, to say leave a job or find that job is not so simple. So some of you may have heard me say over the story of the girl who was still single, and she's working in a place after seminary, and this guy at work is constantly asking her out to go out with her to coffee, for lunch, whatever. The guy's not Jewish, very interested in her. And I said, does the place she worked have other branches? And it did. So this asked to be transferred to another place. And she did. She transferred to a different location. A week after she transfers, this guy shows up at her place. He also transferred to her place. And he's after her and asking her to go out with him. And at that point, I told her, I think you should quit and find another job. Now, she wasn't supporting a family. She did need the money. She did buy a car. She was making payments on her car. She had expenses. It wasn't an easy thing to do. She did quit her job. Baruch Hashem, she found a better job somewhere else, and nothing to do with this guy. He was gone out of her life. It's an Nisayon. There's no question it's an Nisayon. But, you know, some situations are not good, and they're not going to get better. And if they're not going to get better, they're going to get worse. And sometimes you have to take drastic action. And sometimes drastic action means just relocating, just going somewhere else. And, you know, I guess every case is on its own merit. The bottom line, it's obvious chok and kalas rosh against adam le'erva. We have to know the definitions. And again, as I'm saying, the definitions begin with any interaction that's not of a polite or professional type. Once it gets personal, once it gets with texting, once it gets with the emoticons, once it gets with things like that, that is already beyond impersonal relationships. So it's a challenge, and it's something that has to be worked on. But again, it's something that you have to be aware of what your responsibilities are, so to speak, to maintain the proper professional presence in the workplace. And again, I can give the same talk to men, how they have to behave with women in the workplace, but that's not the audience here, so I'm focusing on the women. What I mentioned before about texting in and of itself, you know, what I want to say is, there are communities where texting is unacceptable. There are from communities where no one can text. They still let text in. There's a former student who lives in New York who sends me a text. The Chavar W. Eisenberger, is it okay if I text you, a Shaila? Because in some circles, it's not okay. It's not okay. So I answered, yeah, it is okay. She can text me a Shaila. But the point is, in some places, it's just not acceptable. There's no texting going on. And the reason there's no texting, it's a reaction to an extreme. It's an extreme reaction to a number of situations that the Rabbanim were confronted with, where boys and girls and married men and married women were getting involved with each other inappropriately, which all began with text messaging. It all began with text messaging. And for some reason, I don't know the psychology of it, but somehow, when people text each other, I don't know, they feel no one's going to find out. I don't know what it is. But it has ruined marriages. It has ruined lives. So a number of them said, this is crazy. It's crazy. So there's no texting. Now, as a rule in Yahadus, we generally don't throw out new technology just because it could be harmful. I have no question in my mind. When the telephone came to be, if the Chafetz Chaim was alive when it was just beginning, I'm sure he said, oy gebalt, what's going to happen with Shemes Lashon now? Now it's not just the people around you could talk Lashon Hara, you could talk Lashon Hara all over the world. The telephone's a terrible thing. There was a time, a number of years ago, I mean, I say a number of years ago, I don't know if you've ever seen this, they were doing, trying to get the word out to people not to speak Lashon Hara on the phone. They had little stickers they put on their phones, that when you pick up the phone, don't speak Lashon Hara on the phone. Like, it was a reminder. When you make a phone call, not Lashon Hara. This is, goes back right when they started the Shemiras Lashon initiatives and so on. Chavetz Chaim Tishavetz was just beginning, perhaps. And they had this big, big initiative, big drive. Don't talk Lashon Hara on the phone. So, you know, we could say, forget the phone. We just won't have phones because look how much Lashon Hara could be spread over the telephone. But we don't do that. We don't do that. We don't throw technology out because it can be used improperly. And one could say the same thing about text messaging and emails and so on and so forth. So again, like I said, some communities texting is unacceptable. I do believe one should be very careful before they text a man, even if it's work-related, business-related, school-related. If there was someone at school that you share phone numbers with for whatever reason, you need with homework, tests, or schedules, I would say if you need to speak to them on the phone. Don't text. If it's a professor, whatever it is, my feelings, even if they say, just text me, I would say it's better just to call. Just call, leave a message. Don't text. It's just, I just think texting has become more like, again, like I said before, a friendly kind of thing. That's a exchange between friends as opposed to a more impersonal or professional. I mean, the fact that when people send texts, they're not careful with the grammar, not careful with the English. Like, no, it's own language, so to speak. So that's very informal. So that's part of it. The idea of we don't want this informality. We don't want it to be casual. If you have to talk to a man about something, so that's fine. I understand that, but it's not casual. It should be formal. It should be impersonal. It should be stilted. It should be stuffy. It should be that way. And with your friends, you could be informal and so on. So it could be that texting, in its essence, is more informal. Therefore, be careful with that. Question?
So would sending like a quick email be like the same thing as texting, or if it's an email form? Like,
so again, I don't know how people use email. In other words, I'm not a big email person personally. So for me, email is more, it could be answering shilas, it could be sending over a halachic article. I don't know, you know, I don't know what it is, a shul schedule. That's what email means to me. But if it's going to be the equivalent of a text message via email, if the language is the same, if it's going to be the same, you know, abbreviations that people use and whatever it is, then maybe you're right. Then it becomes the same. It ends up being the same as a text message. Because again, today, to me, email's something you get on your computer. Today, people pick up the phone, the email's on the phone. So at what point does the email become a text message? It's like, for some people, it's the same thing. So if it's the same thing already, then it may be the same. Like you said, it may be a problem. So I guess it just depends on this idea. Like, is it more formal or less formal? Is it? I'm not saying anytime you need to send a message, you could have to write a letter. You know, I'm not saying you have to do that. But just this concept of a formal relationship, a respect, you know, that kind of thing, as opposed to informal, chummy relationship. The only other thing is that some people might feel you are being rude when you're not being friendly and chummy. Our goal is not to be rude. We want to be polite. We want to be professional, but we don't want to be, we don't want to cross the line, so to speak. So what happens when they feel if you're not my friend, you're being rude? Yes.
I have a question on that. What happens if, by not being friendly, they somehow take it as you're trying to play a game with them, and they think it's the completely opposite way?
Hard to get?
Yeah. I had that before.
Yeah. A guy who likes you and would like to take you out might take your no's and turn downs as a playing hard to get. He doesn't understand our culture, doesn't understand where we're coming from. If he doesn't stop, I don't know. In every case, you have to know on its own. I remember one time I was asking a person on the phone, what it was, you know, just maybe talk to your boss, maybe they could speak to the person, explain to them that this is not going to happen, just leave her alone. You know, you have to know what is the best way to deal with these situations. And if, you know, if you find yourself, you know, harassed, then speak to a lawyer. That will probably end it very quickly. There is a thing called harassment.
Right.
And if you feel uncomfortable, this is not what the ad says on the radio, if you feel uncomfortable at work, call. There's a thing called harassment. And if you're being harassed, if a person keeps calling you, that's harassment.
So it's not like my example, it's not exactly like the phone or anything. It's like when we're in the same place. I mean, I tried very hard to, I set my certain standards but I guess he thought it was funny to slap me on the back, and I said, you know, I really don't touch other...
No, you could tell him, you cannot touch me. You cannot touch me. And if you do, that is harassment.
Okay.
He'll back off. But it is, by the way. So, with what we've learned, your co-worker or boss says, I've got tickets to the ball game. Evan at work can come to the ball game. Do you go? No, you don't go. You can't go. That's when you go across the line from professional. So now, if there's a business party and Evan's expected to come, you can show up, especially holiday season. So if you have to show up, you show up. But doesn't mean you eat and drink, and doesn't mean you stay longer than you have to, and doesn't mean you do more than necessary just to show your face and be part of the team, and so to speak, that you're expected to be there. But that's it. You know, you have to, you know what's necessary, and if it's not necessary, then it's not necessary. So, I remember one fellow who was terrible. He decided to take his whole office to the casino. And he hires a limo and picks everyone up, and they go to the casino. This is a firm man. Totally wrong. It's not inappropriate. Casino is wrong. Taking your office, the whole thing was wrong. He thought he was being a nice boss. You know, we'll go out, take the everyone works hard, we'll go to the casino for the night. No, that's not what you do. You want to give your workers a bonus to do something with their spouses, that's great. You want to give them a weekend off or tickets, you can do that. Let them go with their husband, not with you. In other words, it's not... This goes both ways. It works from the employer's end, from the employee's end. Business, we do it, and perhaps he even mentioned in the book, perhaps in an ideal world the woman wouldn't have to work, right? Maybe the ideal thing is for women to be at home and raise the kids and be in, you know, not every lady likes that. Some women need to get out of the house. I understand that too, but I think there are a lot of women who would prefer to be at home, but the financial reality is they have to be out in the workplace. So some people are fortunate to find a place to work that is in a terror environment. And most people don't. Most women who work are not in a terror environment. So you have to just be careful of these things and be alert to it, be aware of it, and just be careful to make sure that you stand out as someone who's very professional, integrity, honest. It's basically, anyone in the workplace, this is for sure for men and women too, you've got to be the best at what you do more than anyone else. Because you're the one who's leaving early on Friday. You're the one who's leaving for Yontif. You're the one who... So you have to show that you put in 110% the rest of the time. You can't be just as good as everyone else. Because they're there on Friday till 5 o'clock. They're there when you're taking off for holidays and so on. So anyone from in the workplace, you know, has to perform, unless you're self-employed. If you have your own business and something else that we want. But I'm saying if you work in a group with other people... You've always got to be the most honest, the most on time, the most diligent, the most hardworking. You really do. And ultimately, you'll make a Kiddush Hashem in the workplace. Ultimately, you make a Kiddush Hashem in the workplace. And that's, again, this is for everyone. Man, what makes no difference? When we're at work, we have got to perform better than everyone else because we're going to ask for favors that no one else gets. I know for some people it's very difficult getting off of Shabbos, Yom Tov. I know one fellow right now who's, he might have to leave his job. Because of leaving Fridays. And there have been a lot of strides made in the legal issues and Fogel's Yisrael and different organizations, but for some people it doesn't help. So it could be a big nisayon. But ultimately, we've got to be the best we could be when we are at work in the workplace. And I think it can be a source of great Kiddush Hashem when you behave on a higher level.